Well, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, and welcome to the Argyle podcast, the 12th Argyle podcast, and what I think I'd like to call today the Steel podcast, given that we have had to go to Sheffield twice in a week. And in honour of that remarkable piece of scheduling by the fixture computer, a little bit from Sheffield's finest you heard there with the Human League. It's been a very, very strange week. A week in which I read in the media papers, Lily Allen has been compared to and described as the Wordsworth of the MySpace generation. Apparently, seriously, in a press release. All I can say is that if Lily Allen is the Wordsworth of the MySpace generation, I surely must be able to lay claim to the title of the Alistair Cook of the podcast era. There we are. I think that's how I'm going to sign off from now on. The Alistair Cook of the podcast era. Pretentious media waffle to the fore this week. I know this has got nothing to do with Argyle, but it's kind of been around in my head, all this sort of Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross and Andrew Sachs kerfuffle. I want to make it perfectly clear right now, you know, before anybody tries to put any pressure on me to resign, that I have never met Andrew Sachs's granddaughter and really have no interest in so doing. Get that cleared up, just, you know, to be sure. Two games for Argyle last week, since last we spoke. A calamitous performance at home to Ipswich. Really, you know, some of the worst defending I've seen for several years at Home Park. A back four that played like strangers. A midfield that lacked any sort of movement whatsoever. And a strike force that just looked, well, you know, kind of leg-weary and a bit clueless. Not helped, and I'm going to say more about this later on, not helped by refereeing performance. Again, of an unusual ineptitude from a guy called Pat Miller. Talk more about that a little bit later on, as I said. But, yeah, Ipswich, not good. I mean, Ipswich played well, to be fair. They didn't look like a side in 18th place. John Walters, I thought in particular, was outstanding for the Tractor Boys last Saturday. And really, from the first 90 seconds, where he cut through the defence at will, really taking advantage of some really quite horrendous defending, and hit the outside of the post. You knew it was going to be a long afternoon for the Pilgrims. And so it proved, although in the early part of the first half, we created a couple of chances. Paul Gallagher through, couldn't finish. Rory Fallon into the side netting, but then just failing to clear a ball that was bouncing around, giving Owen Garvin all the time he needed to wallop a volley into the bottom corner of the net. Coming back, should have had a penalty. Can't understand why we didn't have a penalty, really, for a foul that was given, but given in completely the wrong place, just outside the area instead of well inside it. And wouldn't you know it, the free kick comes to nothing, and Ipswich goes straight down the other end and score almost a carbon copy of their first goal, apart from the fact that it was a little bit further out. Garvin looked good, actually. Comfortable on the ball, you know, easy on both feet. And I know he's had a bit of a torrid time over the last 12 months or so for Ipswich, so a real comeback performance from him. But really, he was afforded far too much time and space, despite the fact that the referee did his level best to get in the way of a Luke Summerfield block for that. Really was a head-holding experience. And then 3 minutes after half-time, when you'd be expecting Argyle to come roaring back, you know, yet again, just unable to deal with the simplest of balls bouncing around, making it easy first for Norris to shoot and then for Lisby to mop up the rebound. A late rally, you know, inspired. I'm going to, you know, bang the table here. Inspired, guys, by the substitution of Steve McLean. You know, 15, 20-minute performance where he did everything right, held the ball up, played people in, added pace and urgency and inventiveness into the Argyle. Says, I know, I'm banging on about him again, but really, you know, people have got to start appreciating what he brings to the show. And hopefully, you know, he's in for an extended run in the side, because we really did look a different animal with him on the pitch. Good goal from Craig Cathcart from a free kick. Nice diving header. But really, there was no way back for Argyle. Tuesday night, we seem to be into this pattern of win one, lose one, or lose one, win one. And ground out again, apparently not a very impressive performance, but enough to beat, really, a pretty moderate Sheffield Wednesday side. I don't think anyone was too impressed with Brian Laws coming out on local radio and saying Plymouth are not a very good side. Well, you know, Brian, maybe we agree on that actually we're not going to be up there challenging, but Can we be a bit real? You know, we've put five past your guys in less than a month, with no reply, taken home 6 points. Thanks very much. Whinging and moaning about possession really isn't going to win you any prizes at the end of the season. And really, for all their possession, so I'm led to believe Wednesday barely threatened. I had a little look at the Virgin highlights, which I can now get on Mac. If you didn't know this, you can now get the Virgin highlights on Mac, and they're infinitely better than what you tend to get on the Championship, because you get more than just the goals apart from anything else. So yeah, saw the highlights on Mac on the Virgin Football, and really, three or four chances for the Wednesdays, nothing really to write home about. A classic sort of Argyle away performance, really. Backs to the wall for parts of the second half, protecting a lead, but picking up pointage on the road yet again. So on to Saturday, and again, I say I return to the Steel City, to Sheffield United, who I fancy are going to provide rather more of a stern test. Just looking down the team sheet of people who are likely to be playing, you know, they've got a front five here of James Beattie, Billy Sharp, Darius Henderson, Danny Webber, Anthony Stokes. Any one of those Argyle would kill, frankly, to have in their starting lineup. I imagine it's going to be Beattie and Sharp with one or two of the others on the bench. You know, being able to interchange a strike force at will like that, something we can only dream of. No Brian Howard in the midfield. The former Barnsley man has picked up five yellow cards and will sit this one out. I've always been a big admirer of Brian Howard. I like what he does with the ball. Slight surprise, really, that he ended up going to Sheffield United when big money moves to the Premiership were touted at the end of the season. Didn't happen for him, and now he's hoping to make it there with the Blades. I would think he's in with a very good chance. Unlikely to see Gary Speed or Gary Naismith, both of whom are struggling. But in players like Dean Marney, David Carney. Wake up, it's early in the morning. I've only just got up. Cut me some slack here. David Carney, David Cotterill, Matty Spring, and Stephen Quinn likely to be in the midfield four. And then they've got players like Greg Halford, Morgan and Kilgallen, and Ehiog, three super Premier level centre backs. Sungji High. And of course, you know, Mitchell and Mann himself, Paddy Kenny in goal. He's a fantastic goalkeeper. Obviously, he's got his limitations, but he's a real character, Paddy Kenny. I'm a big fan, and she'll be sorry to be missing this one. As for Argyle, I know there's the old adage about not changing a winning side, but I fancy Starock will. He's going to be looking to freshen things up after the victory. Courtesy of who? Who? Tell me. I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Say his name again a little bit louder. It's that man, Steve McLean, again. Back in the side for his first start. I think it's the first start of the season. Bangs in the winner against his former club. And he has the class not to celebrate in front of the Owls. What a guy. What a guy. And a man of the match performance from Luke Summerfield to boot. Off my high horse now. Who are Argyle going to play? I would think. I mean, we've been saying this for several weeks. Nicholas Marin must have a start. But I really do think on this occasion he really must. All set for him to come in for Jamie Mackie. Luggy, in that canny Scottish way, he has opted instead to play the more defensive-minded Jim Paterson there, and clearly it's done the business. He may well be persuaded to do the same again. But I can see Chris Clark having a rest. He's, as I say, run his lungs out for the last sort of few weeks. And it may well be that Sturrock feels it's time for him to have a break after this sort of relentless pace of five games in 14 days. That may be the opportunity for Marin to come in. Central midfield, is the rehabilitation of Simon Walton going to continue? Is he going to persist with Summerfield, who, as I said, had a really good game by all accounts on Tuesday, as opposed to Saturday when he had a bit of a shocker? And again at the back, Barker at left back, Paterson at left back. We're carrying on with McNamee and hoping he finds his form. What about Timar? All very much up in the air as far as Argyle are concerned. I would like to see, whether I will see, I don't know, but what I would like to see McLean and Gallagher continue up front. I would like to see Marin wide on the right, with Paterson probably on the left if Mackie's still not fit. And I actually, on the back of a good performance, I would give Luke a break and I would play Simon Walton in there because I think we're going to need some extra competitiveness against players like Matt Spring, who takes no prisoners out there, as well as being a very, very talented player indeed. Now, the other thing I wanted to get into today was referees, because really, you know, the refereeing performance I saw on Saturday was one of the poorest I have seen for quite a long time. And there's been an awful lot of jumping up and down about referees this year, partly on the back of the Respect campaign, which basically been designed in order to stop Chelsea harassing the ref, as far as I can see, and this business where they've all got to shake hands as they file past each other at the start of the game, which is nice and appropriate and a little bit mannered, in my view. But also, I mean, the Stuart Atwell thing and the phantom goal and the fact that the issue with refs has been around for quite a long time. Only got to tune into 606 or any of the phone-in discussion programmes, and 8 out of 10 calls are going to be people banging on about the referee. And I think, you know, all the suggestions that we have to the issue of refereeing in this country seem to be really rather skewed. The major problem we have with refereeing is not the quality of them. It really isn't. Actually, most referees are pretty darn good. The major problem we have is a lack of talent coming through. We're drawing from an increasingly shrinking pool. Half the games at sort of lower league level, I'm talking sort of lower non-league level here, are unable to take place because of the lack of referee. Referee recruitment numbers are the lowest I think they've ever been. And when you see, you know, the growing sort of charge sheet, if you like, numbers of refs who are being abused physically on the field by players, it's absolutely no wonder that people are refusing to come forward to take it up, or that people are starting to take it up and then being discouraged and dropping out. I mean, resignation numbers, certainly in my local league down here, you know, it's a major, major problem. People don't want to ref because of the abuse they're subjected to on the pitch and, you know, as you go up through the leagues and people start watching from the fans. Now, I've just started reffing again myself at under 11 level, which is about all I can cope with, and it's really good fun. I love watching the kids run around. It's not really, you know, there aren't too many decisions to make in that sort of football. But even so, you know, when you've got 20 or 30 parents along the touchline, you do feel the pressure. And because they're not slow in coming forward with their comments about whether you've got that right, whether you haven't. And, you know, it's always a bit of a flush to me when I come off the pitch and someone says, "Oh, you've done all right there. That was a good game." Equally, you know, you make a call that you can see absolutely crystal clearly. And, you know, there's a bit of a fairly good-natured, but still with an edge to it. You know, the banter, saying, "Where did they get him from?" type of thing. Doesn't help, of course, that a lot of them know what my job is. But my point really is that if we want refereeing and referees to improve, it's not going to happen overnight. And it isn't going to happen by simply allowing manager after manager to wheel themselves into a studio and take the referee's performance apart. I've said this before, I think. The referee is unique on the football field. The referee and his assistants are unique on the football field in that they're the only people there involved with the game who are not trying to cheat. Make no bones about it. All the players out there are looking to cheat, to gain an advantage illegally, one way or another, the best way they can. Almost certainly they've been put up to it by the managers, who were looking for that sly nudge, fall over in the penalty area, the pullback that goes unnoticed. And yet whenever these things happen, and they do time after time after time during the game, it's the referee who gets slated for missing it. And that cannot be right. If we're looking to make the referee's job easier, rather than bring in technology, which as one of the Stanford 2020 games I saw yesterday showed, you know, crystal clearly, is not going to show conclusively every single decision. It really isn't. Rather than bring in technology, what we need to be doing is changing the culture of the game, whereby managers and players are not feeling themselves under pressure and under the incentive to cheat. Now, you may say that's a pipe dream, that with football being the moneyed industry it is, it's impossible to eradicate that element of desperation from the game, and you may well be right. But I think it's important to remember where that comes from. It comes from the pressure of fans, it comes from the pressure of owners, it does not come from the referees. And really, it's bizarre to be blaming referees for missing high-pressure decisions in situations that are absolutely not of their making. There we are. I've ranted on enough for today. If you're going to Sheffield again, have a safe trip. Good luck. Bring us back 3 points. And above all, keep it green. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye now.